Hello and welcome to the No Code World Radio podcast. I'm Alex, your host, and you're listening to the fourth season. I'm in London. This is my very last day, actually. I'm going to leave in a couple of hours, but right before I take my train, I'm going to meet with Max, founder of 100 Days of No Code. You probably have seen this hashtag on Twitter, or X, as it's called now, and I'm very curious to understand how it all started and what they are doing now, because I've seen that it's expanding. So I'm very looking forward to meet with Max. Let's go for the discussion. Hi, Max. Thank you for having me here at the RSA House in London, which is a pretty fancy building, fancy place. Maybe you can tell us two words about it after. I'm very glad that we have a chance to meet. You're the founder of the 100 Days of No Code, which is quite popular hashtag, and there's a project behind it, and I want to know all about it. So I'm very happy that we have a chance, even if it was a bit last minute, to talk. First of all, can you introduce yourself a little bit, please?
Yeah, of course. Firstly, super excited to be here. Although it is a fancy place, it's a really open space for anyone to come into. So if ever someone is around this area, it's a good spot to work.
But it's a bit of a secret.
Maybe not anymore after this podcast.
I don't have a massive audience. Only quality people listening to it.
So. Yeah, exactly. But I'm Max. So I run 100 Days of No Code, which is an online campus that helps people bring their ideas to life. With the kind of the twist being that they don't have to write any code to bring their ideas to life. And that is because we teach people how to visually create their ideas into reality. We run boot camps, we run challenges, we have courses, but it all started as a Twitter hashtag.
Just before we get into the story of how you came up with this hashtag and the context also, because I think it was quite linked to what happened at that time. What's your background? How did you arrive into this no code?
Yeah, sure. So I guess pre-no code, I didn't really have much of a background in the sense of I was straight out of university or nearly straight out of university. So, but the recurring theme, like in everything I've done, is I've always dabbled in a little bit of like entrepreneurship, or try to kind of get my teeth stuck into any project or any experience that gives me a little bit more understanding of how business works and being on that kind of front line. Whether we made money or not was a whole another thing, but at that age, I've always just been quite intrigued by it and driven by the fact that I didn't really want a job. So how can I make money in another way? And that obviously led me into different paths. But the first thing I did out of university, and I guess my background is in social entrepreneurship. So I did a year-long program that kind of sent me into the front line of various social impact organizations to understand some of the problems that they were facing. And that was all to kind of give me a bit of an understanding of a problem before going out to build some venture that may or may not kind of solve that, but those problems, those social issues.
Okay. You don't have any technical background?
No, exactly. No technical background. And I would put myself at the very beginning of the technical spectrum. So at school, I was always probably one of the worst people in IT class. Okay. And my friends always kind of like joked about it as well, so I was pretty bad. And like, even to just put that into context, spreadsheets scared me. Microsoft Word was just about doable, but beyond that, I wasn't any good at tech.
Okay, interesting. So how did it all started? How this?
Yeah, so I'll just give you a quick backstory. So while at university, when I was kind of exploring this whole idea of entrepreneurship, I worked at a and kind of co-founded this Airbnb for storage startup called Storage Shepherd. We raised a little bit of money and we won some awards, and it was all orientated around connecting with people with spare space in their homes to people that wanted to add to share or put their storage somewhere else, but they wanted it to be a little bit cheaper than putting it in a warehouse, and convenient. You know, they could put it in a neighbor's house rather than a big storage warehouse in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
That was the idea. We thought it was very good at the time. But one of the reasons we failed was because our team, so there was three of us, we were all non-technical.
Okay.
And we were very dependent on developers, to the point where we were kind of not really able to respond to user feedback, because we got some feedback in, but we couldn't make any changes to the product. So it was this back and forth that took a long time, and we couldn't move to the speed of the market, really. And that planted a seed in my head of, okay, I'm going to need to learn a bit of some technical knowledge if I'm going to, you know, build my next thing or be successful in some way. So that was the seed. And then out of university, I thought, well, to address this, I'm going to learn how to code. That was all I knew at the time. That was the, I didn't know about no code. It just made sense. So I thought, right, I'll sign up to a few coding boot camps. But fortunately, before even starting any of those coding boot camps, very fortunately, I stumbled across an article by Ryan Hoover that said, that titled The Rise of No Code. And that was when I first like was introduced to the idea, and I was completely taken aback by this idea and went down the big rabbit hole ever since.
It's Ryan Hoover, who's the founder of Product Hunt.
Yes.
As I think, has always been a big advocate of no-code tools. There've been several no-code tools launched successfully on Product Hunt.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think this article, I think it was 2018 or 2019 or something, but it was I remember reading it as well. So I think it was one of those things that kind of started, that contributed to start the movement, I would
say. Yes, for sure. Okay. Absolutely.
And so what did you do from there?
So from there, I quickly took away my place on some of these coding boot camps that I was about to start. Because I think I knew deep down that I wasn't really cut out.
It's okay, actually. The sound is...
So I keep...
Yeah, you can.
So I knew deep down that I didn't really want to learn to code. It was more of a out of necessity rather than something I was doing out of joy. So any other way I could get to the same outcome, I was very open to that idea. A no code was a different way from A to B. And to me, it looked a more fun, easier and quicker way to get there. I scrapped my place on the coding bootcamps and started digging into just the world of no code, seeing whatever I could find online, YouTube videos, articles just like Ryan Hoover's one, communities. But at that time, so in late 2019, the space was very new. There wasn't much infrastructure around it, or people or communities. So I was a little bit isolated and didn't quite know where to start. I essentially failed and kind of gave up and spent a couple of months, you know, in a rabbit hole that didn't turn into anything. But I still had that no code knowledge, or at least idea of no code in my head, that I thought, well, if I start something again, I'll come back to it.
Yeah.
You
made the first, the groundwork maybe of like knowing, because there's many different tools, many, I mean, understanding the ecosystem.
Yeah. So like, and that was it. I had very good understanding of the tools and the ecosystem, but I didn't know how to use any of them.
Okay.
I hadn't built any projects and I hadn't got any proof that I knew anything about this space.
Okay. But did you have any project? I mean, did you, that maybe that was the problem, or you had nothing to build, or?
There was a little bit of that. I'll get to this in a minute, but that was one of the key problems I had starting out, was I didn't have a project. So I didn't have that motivation level to really dive in, because as we all know, no code is easier, but it's not easy. There's an investment there.
Definitely, but we all know, but it's still good to say it.
Yeah.
Because there's new people that, and there are also people who are starting to say it's easy, and you know, it's like blurring the message, but I think it's very important.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, and so I guess then the pandemic happened?
Yes, yeah, exactly. So the pandemic happened, and that was almost a good time, because although it was a bad time for many people, for lots of people, of course, we had a bit of spare time on our hands. We were locked inside. And I kind of thought, well, I dropped no code, you know, a few months back. Now is the perfect time to actually learn this stuff. So when I'd actually looked at learning to code, I'd seen that there was this thing called 100 days of code. And it always stuck out to me, well, actually, that looks like a really good way to learn, a challenge-based way of learning, on top of maybe a boot camp or something, or a structured curriculum. So that idea of kind of challenge-based learning had kind of planted in my mind. So when I came to learning no code, I thought, well, the last time I tried this, I failed because I didn't have any structure. Let's now apply 100 days of code, but to no code, and do the equivalent version, which then became 100 days of no code. And all that looked like was me announcing to my sort of 50 follower Twitter account, hey, I'm going to be learning to code, no code, for 30 minutes a day over the next 100 days. I'm going to share my progress every day. Does anyone want to join? And that was it. And it resonated with people. But that was that was the start of the journey.
So you started by basically applying to yourself, like you did the first run, pretty much, to inspire people. But were there people who joined straight away?
Yeah.
Or you had to go through alone the first 100 days?
So the funny thing is, people assume that I was the first person to complete 100 days of no code, but I wasn't. Because a few really dedicated people that saw that early Twitter message, they completed it before me. Because they just had a level of consistency that I didn't. And they did it day to day for those 100 days.
Because you say that because you didn't complete like 100 days in a row.
So I had a couple of rest days, but some people didn't, and they were so excited about learning these skills that they just had an intrinsic motivation that drove them through that 100 days. And of course, there wasn't much else to do, as we keep saying.
True. But so how did you, or those people also, kind of structured their work, like the 30 days? How did you decide what you were going to do? Because at that time, there were no program or anything. I mean, it was in...
Yeah. And that was the thing. So it was a very powerful formula for learning for people that maybe were coming from more technical background, but it wasn't so powerful for people like me who didn't have that technical background and needed a little bit of handholding to basically tell me what to do, what to learn. What does a database mean? What does responsive design mean? Mm-hmm. All these terms were completely foreign to me. So I did need a bit of that formal education, but I didn't have it. So what I did was just pick a project. And at the time, that project was a positivity map. So trying to map out all the positive things that people were doing in response to COVID in my local community. I thought it was a tangible project. It could be quite useful and help people sort of boost morale in a way. And it helped me learn to no code. And I just reversed engineered it and was like, well, what skills do I need to have this outcome, have this project? And kind of just put together articles, YouTube videos, and the community on Twitter to kind of help me get there. And that was it, really. But there was no formal path.
Okay. And did you, because it's interesting to understand, you know, like the conception of like, at which point did you figure, okay, this is something I could reproduce and maybe because you didn't have a chance to have someone to, as you say, like handle, you know, I don't know, like you said, give you the pass. At which point did you figure, okay, I'm going to do it, you know, like as I'm doing it, maybe keep the notes, or I don't know what you did. And
sure.
Or was it afterwards? Or
yeah, so I think it was around day 40 or day 50 when I realized, okay, people really care about learning this skill. People are really excited about it, but they need a little bit more structure. The problem I had was I'm still a beginner. I can't give people structure. I'm learning this myself. How am I meant to guide people when I don't know how to guide myself? So what I did was, in the early days, was instead of thinking, oh, I need to create content, I need to create a curriculum, all these things, I thought, well, no, I can't do those. So let's instead focus on building a community around people. And what that looked like at the time was essentially workshops, accountability groups, and things that didn't require me to share knowledge because I didn't have it. And it was actually allowing people that did have that knowledge already to share the knowledge.
It's very interesting because, I mean, like there's so much you can learn without a teacher in a way, just, you know, from your peers, like, but what you need is a group. Like and being alone on the internet, although there is vast knowledge there, it's not the same as having someone tell you, okay, this resource is good, or come, I will do a half an hour workshop on this.
Exactly.
So yeah. I think, yeah, I understand now more like the past, and I think there's a lot of value of what you could do straight away. But it was also a bit out of necessity.
Kind exactly. Of yeah. Born out of necessity. And I was, you know, going to these workshops that I'd organized and going to these accountability groups and getting more out of it than most people, because, you know, I was really at the start of my learning journey as well. And you're completely right. Like the accountability groups, we had a weekly calls, people would jump on and they would just share what the best learning resources were. They'd be like, oh, you should skip that one, but like, do this, this is great. And then, you know, you'd save tons of time, and your path would become a little bit more clear in the absence of curriculum at the time. Yeah.
No, it's very interesting. And I remember seeing on Twitter people posting photos of the group calls, for instance, or there's also like a powerful network effect with this also. One, each of the people from the community can kind of advertise, not in a bad way, but I mean,
yes,
show the...
Yeah, and that's, I think that was one of the other, or what still is one of the powerful mechanics of this way of learning, is you've got the formula for learning. Learn for 30 minutes a day, share what you're going to learn every day, and make sure you publicly commit to actually doing that. And one of the best things about that is that by sharing what you learn every day, you bring other people on that journey with you, whether that's feedback, whether that's just support, cheerleaders, and then you've kind of got your own army of people around you as you're learning versus doing it on your own.
Yeah, that's another thing that really I think emerged at the same time is like the hashtag build in public.
Yes,
yeah. Which was a thing about the same time, or what would you say? Or
yeah, it was, and it's interesting, like, it's not designed to help people build in public 100 days of no code. It's designed to help them learn to no code. But in doing 100 days of no code, people say it really kind of helped them become more free on socials and help them build that habit of sharing what they do. Because the funny thing is, people find it hard to just tweet into the void. But if they have permission to tweet, so, oh, well, I'm part of this challenge, it's part of the rules, like I need to tweet, then it changes the framing of it and people are much more likely to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's interesting. But I mean, yeah. It's hard. And I guess also you also kind of get your first followers also from the community.
Yeah.
So you're not totally speaking alone, or yeah. at least you have people who go through what you're doing, and then slowly from there you build your
exactly. And that's the beauty of having a hashtag, is you just type it in and you see everyone else who's on that learning journey. And obviously you've got lots of community platforms, Circle, Slack, all this stuff, but I actually think the best community platform is Twitter, in a way. So
I mean, yeah. I agree, and I think your story really shows that. I mean, you really built the community on top of it, and it was great. I think that probably helps, like, leverage, like, really the and grow quicker. Are you afraid of everything that's happening with Twitter or X? How it's called now?
yeah, exactly. I think my peace of mind was a little bit higher when Elon Musk wasn't running Twitter, but I think now it's almost a good thing, because we actually encourage people to share their journey where they feel comfortable, whether that is Slack, whether that's Twitter, whether it's LinkedIn or somewhere
LinkedIn.
Else.
I feel like LinkedIn has grown also kind of, I mean, it's been around for a while, but I find it's a different format. I used to like the shorter, like, tweets, but I feel like LinkedIn can be annoying, but it can also be quite interesting.
Yeah.
If you filter out, you know, like, all the noise and the entrepreneurs, like, saying their solo stories there.
Yeah, exactly. And so, although it could potentially change the dynamic of how we started, i.e. a Twitter hashtag, I think it's forced us to think about, how does this formula work across different platforms? So it's probably will be good for us long term, but definitely is an interesting time building a business on top of Twitter.
But so what is it now? Because I saw that you have even a team of people working with you. How did it grow? Like, really, because now it's a company that you're running. Yeah, I mean, how, because from the outside, at least, I don't feel like you're really dependent on Twitter anymore. I mean, you're more like an education company.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I guess Twitter is definitely very important for us, but thankfully, I guess just over that period of time, so nearly 3 years now since we started, you just build up a level of that kind of social proof and audience where you can gain distribution from multiple sources rather than just one. And I'm sure that's what you found with Contournement, is just like, you can find people in different places. But for us, the first iteration of the 100 Days of No Code was a hashtag. Then it went from hashtag to a community. And that was what I said, the workshops, the accountability groups, basically all the things that didn't involve me teaching, which is great. So I learned as part of that. And then it went from hashtag community to essentially education company. And that leap probably took the longest to become an education company, because what that looks like is designing, working back from outcomes and designing learning experiences that help people go from one place to another. And that's a whole nother beast in and of itself.
When did people started paying for what you were organizing?
So they started paying when we had a community. So we had the in public community that anyone could be a part of, which was, as I said, on Twitter. But then we had the paid community, which was on Slack. And that just offered a few more benefits. And that was kind of the first validation that people want extra help.
And they were learning this skill. Pay for it. And
yeah,
you need this validation in order to figure like that you might build a company.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was great for validation, but it was also great in telling me it's hard to build a business off £10 a month subscriptions. So it kind of got us thinking as well, how does this become a sustainable business as well?
And that's when I guess maybe you started doing like more like boot camp, like more formal, I mean, not formal, but like experiences, as you say. Like,
yeah, exactly. So we are kind of first, step into the world of education. So I was, it was still just me, and this was in 2021, October. And I decided to essentially add a daily bite-sized curriculum on top of the challenge.
Okay.
So there's that formula that's always been there, the three things. But then I thought, well, okay, I'm now kind of in a place where I can add that layer of structure to people's journey. Will this help people get further along? Will it help them direct their efforts in a better way? So I basically announced this sort of beta version of the 100 Days of No Code Challenge, but with curriculum in sort of September time. And rolling around October the 1st, we had about 250 people that had signed up, but I had no curriculum.
Okay.
So essentially I was writing the lessons the day before they came to the the participants.
Must have been intense.
It was a good accountability mechanism for me. So it was okay, validate people want this. Yeah. Cool. Now let's write the lessons. And maybe that was a bit too lean, but that was how it started. So that was our first dip into education, and then from there we've added extra curriculums, but then also boot camps as well.
All right. Do you have examples of people? I guess I have two questions. I shouldn't ask two questions sometimes, but I didn't.
No, you're good.
But it's what people were building, or how did they learn? Mm-hmm. Because I guess a lot of them had projects.
Mm.
Maybe I'm wrong, but and what were they doing after? Also, once they went through the.
Yeah, sure. So I guess with the project one, either way, so we believe, and it just makes a ton of sense, project-based learning is more powerful than simply learning to learn. So having an output or some form of tangible output to your learning makes sense. But we found that there was kind of two types. There was people that came in with an idea, and they were fixated on this idea and they're really excited about it. So we'd channel their efforts around that idea. And then we found people that were just interested in no code, but we said to them, you're going to get this far if you learn without a project, and you're going to get much further if you learn with a project. So in that case, we would give people ideas for projects that they could build. And you'd start with, okay, a simple blog, directory, job boards, simple personal websites.
Okay.
The simple 0 to 1 stuff. Mm-hmm. And then we would kind of help them pick those more advanced projects as they went.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I think I have really mixed feeling about people coming with their projects, because I think sometimes what happens, I think it's true, it gives a great motivation, so this is the best, but also sometimes it doesn't help learning, because maybe their project is too complicated.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, it's like they are going to, you know, it's like, and I think it's much better, at least in my point of view, when you learn to work on kind of fake projects, but are designed for learning, learning databases, learning automation, learning like specific skills. I think it's so.
I agree totally. And some people try and like sprint before they can walk. Mm-hmm. And without that fundamental understanding, and this is exactly what I did at the start. I tried to go too hard, too quickly, and realized I didn't actually understand what I was trying to build. I didn't know what data I needed to come in and out of the app. I didn't know what design or the onboarding experience should be like. All these things, which I didn't have an understanding of because I'd never built a product before, a tech product before.
Yeah.
So without that fundamental grasp of the key concepts, then you're going to hit a limit sooner rather than later. So it makes total sense to get those in first as well.
Yeah, and what you're saying is interesting because I feel like there's like those key concepts. There's obviously technical concepts, but then there's also a little bit of design, a little bit of product management.
Yeah.
Like when you're building a product and you have those things there, and it's hard, and it's all our professionals in each of those categories. But
yeah.
It's important to get them.
Yeah, that's so true, because it's like, it's the classic thing that, sure, there is no code involved, but there's that kind of classic tweet where there's no code, but actually that doesn't mean there's no design, no marketing, no product management, all of the things that come with actually building a tech product.
Yeah, well, definitely. Do you have examples maybe of some tech products that were built as part of the 100 days or maybe after by the alumni?
Yeah. So I guess one example that just comes to mind, and is kind of a good example of what no code is all about, is, and you probably saw them, the Bad Unicorn guys. So Bad Unicorn, the product studio that kind of built bad business ideas every 2 weeks.
I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their tweets were hilarious.
Yeah. So they set out the intention to build something, namely a bad business idea every 2 weeks. And they were able to work at that speed because they were purely using no code tools. And some weeks said they would build chatbots, other weeks they'd build marketplaces, or kind of mobile apps. But it was a real demonstration of kind of the merry-go-round of all the different almost things that you can build with no code across different tools in that time frame as well. And the best way to kind of visualize what you can build with no code is almost looking at their site, because that's what they built across that spectrum in such a short period of time. So I definitely recommend looking at those guys.
Okay, cool. What's maybe, before we talk a little bit about how you work, what's the roadmap? What's the coming on for 100 days of no code?
Yeah. So I'd be interested to see how you're thinking about AI. But one of the things that we've been thinking about is, okay, so no code is great, and AI is also really powerful. But how do we help people leverage both of these things together? Because naturally they're going to converge. And what does that look like from a building experience when these two things are together? Because it's slightly different to just visual development. It is visual development, conversational development, and code development, but auto-generated, all in one. So there's more layers to that building process now. And we've been trying to think about, okay, how do we help people navigate that landscape and build in a faster, more powerful, more flexible way, thanks to AI and no code together. But how are you thinking about it?
I think it's, I think part of the future of no code is AI. I think AI is the extra boost that is going to take the no code movement, I would say, to the level of technical things that you can do as with code,
sure,
which is almost no limits, pretty much.
Yeah,
that's what I think. But I think we're very early, also.
Yes,
and I think actually we, and some people have read that some people are saying that we are already out of the hype cycle of the AI. So now I think it's going to be interesting. It's going to quiet down, and we're going to have time to kind of see how it fits. Yeah. But it is very important. I think you posted something about it on LinkedIn a few days ago, how you felt like your team needed to learn more about it. No?
Yes, definitely.
But yeah, I think it's... it's important. That's, I think, where we are. I don't think it's important to rush into doing an AI course or this kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
But we did enough. So we produced some content around AI. So,
yeah.
And now we're following and see how it goes with the.
Yes. And I guess it's when we speak about one, we're kind of also speaking about the other, because it's rolled into one. Yeah. So, and just the looking at tools like Zapier or Bardeen or even kind of Framer, they're just adding elements of AI into your existing workflows just to speed up what you already do. Mm. So you're teaching the same outputs, but there are just slightly different ways of getting there with AI that we're starting to see in the tools. Yeah. And as you say, it's not fully imagined, fleshed out, but we're starting to see little bits and pieces in those tools with AI.
Yeah, I think like people are very focused on ChatGPT right now, for instance, which I agree is fascinating. Mm. But I think it's even more interesting to be able to use the OpenAI APIs using Make or Zapier.
Mm.
So that's one thing. It's like automating AI, I think, is the true next level.
Yeah.
But as you were talking, I was thinking actually maybe that we won't even have to really use AI because, as you said, they will be integrated into the tools.
Yes.
And like if you see already Zapier, I think Zapier is the tool that has the most advanced integration. I mean, they have close partnership, I guess, with OpenAI. They have their own AI by Zapier. I don't know what's under. Maybe it's OpenAI, but it's like a level of abstraction. You can generate code in the code steps of Zapier with AI. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess you might have to learn how to prompt, but really it's like you're going to be in context. You won't have to go to ChatGPT to do those things. You're not going to be...
Yeah, and I think that's the exciting thing is it's all in one building experience. So it's kind of you go into a tool, you may prompt initially, like build my sitemap for me based on this criteria, or build my database schema based on these requirements. And then there's kind of the layer of the visual where, okay, it's given me a start, it's given me a starting point. Now, let's kind of customize this a bit. Okay, I've done a bit of customization. Let's go back and prompt a little more. So it's just back and forth, and then on top of it, if you need that custom injection of code, then as you say, like Zapier adding, they're writing the code for you. Like there's that layer as well you can exploit. So it's all wrapped in this one build experience, which I think, as you say, takes no code beyond what it could have been before.
No, I think it's really exciting. And like, for instance, I'm really surprised that your table, for instance, that hasn't announced yet what you were saying, because for me it seems... it's probably not easy to do, but like you write a few sentences and you get 3-4 tables that you know modelize like the schema of what you wrote. Or so yeah, that's exactly what I think would be a big benefit, because I think they announced something like you can use AI into your fields just to generate content, which is I think a pretty basic use.
Yeah.
Or generating formulas also would be great.
Yeah.
You can already do it in ChatGPT, but sometimes you make mistakes.
Yeah.
While they have all the data, they have thousands of formulas that people have written, so they must be able to train a model. I don't know. Maybe they will probably do it, but...
You wonder on some of these bigger tools what they're cooking up. it'll be interesting to see.
Because sometimes you feel like, oh, they're slow, and but then all of a sudden you have, you know, they didn't say anything, but there was actually hundreds of people working on that. Just like when Notion announced AI by Notion, which no one saw it coming.
It came out of nowhere. Yeah
exactly. I feel like they were a bit, they kind of missed their launch because it was almost at the same time as, I don't know, ChatGPT, which version or something. I feel like there was
an overlap.
Kind of missed. It's actually, we haven't talked about any tools per se. I haven't asked you like almost 40 minutes and we didn't mention any tools. Just to go back on the 100 days of no code. What tools people are learning? Is it more like free? Is it like...
We do often take quite a tool agnostic approach because we want, or we find that tools differ in the sense of how compatible they are for each person. Someone may find Webflow very intuitive over another website building tool just because of the way they learn. Hmm. So we try and keep it reasonably tool agnostic to give people optionality. Okay. But then we also try and guide them so that they don't go into tools that are a little bit beyond their level. So we always kind of start, or have recently started, with 5 tools that we try and help people build from. And the idea being that we're not really teaching those tools specifically. We're actually just teaching them so you gain these transferable skills that you can then apply in any tool you want. Cool. So those look like, and I often forget the five because there's always one missing, but those look like Notion, which we've talked about, for kind of general like organization and project management, etc. Airtable for your databases, Softr for those kind of simple web apps, Zapier to kind of automate what you're doing, and then Glide as kind of that mobile layer. And then with those five tools, you can build 90% of things. And then of course, you can take the skills you've learned out of that, the basic building blocks of building anything, and then apply them to more complex tools as you go. So that's how we do it.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting approach. And I think, and so it makes sense that we didn't really talk too much about tools before. But no, but I think it's great because as we were saying right before recording, I think we're sometimes too focused on the tools themselves and those the shiny tools and the new ones. And AI, I think, is different because I really think everyone needs to look into it. But yeah. And so do you have any plans around AI yet, or just exploring? And or maybe you don't want to share it.
No, of course. Yeah, it's funny. I laugh just because finally out of the more existential phase of thinking around it, and now kind of seeing it, as we've discussed, as a real benefit to no code, and seeing the two combined as this like superhuman sort of machine, which is really exciting. Whereas I think initially when AI came out, I almost was seeing it as a negative potentially for no code. But I think now after reading, learning and seeing what's possible, I think it will only benefit no code. In terms of what we're doing, so we have a no code times AI bootcamp that is coming around the corner, and which has evolved from just the no code bootcamp. And that is, as mentioned, helping people leverage both of these things together. And then separately, which I've actually just launched today, is this 100 days of AI. Basically helping people learn AI skills just in the way that we have helped people learn no code skills on a daily basis. And specifically, we've kind of got a B2C version where anyone can do it, like for the hobbyist, for the creator, and then a B2B version. So for companies that, as we were saying, that want to put their team through it and kind of get that level of output that they couldn't beforehand, where they can kind of grow grow without growing their headcount, then that's a path for them. So thinking about it in that way, still early, but trying to help people get onboarded in this space.
Cool. Well, looking forward to see what people will be building and see all this on Twitter, on X.
Yeah, exactly.
With just a few minutes, tell me about outside of your community that you built, I would say more locally, what's your feeling with, I would say maybe first like London as a city regarding maybe no code, but also tech in general. Do you go to meetups? What do you find here?
Yeah. So I've been guilty of not going to many meetups, but I think that was because of kind of the post sort of lockdown, getting just a bit used to being inside.
the transition is weird.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't kind of move into that ecosystem that early, but there's definitely lots of like smaller no-code gatherings, not on the scale of the no-code summit happening in Paris, but smaller kind of meetups.
Do you do like in-person meetups for the 100 days of no-code?
I should be doing them. And it's definitely something we should or will want to start doing soon. Watch the space on that one. it's a good ecosystem to be part of.
Okay, great. Last question, two questions. What one thing, and it's not related to no code at all, but one thing that you like to do in London that you would recommend to someone who's visiting? But you like to do yourself, not like going to the London Eye or something.
Yeah.
Unless you really like to do that.
Yeah, so I would, first thing, London Eye. No. So what would I recommend? Just thinking, because generally, because you're not doing the touristy things, it's not London specific. So for example, I do lots of tennis. Okay. I would recommend people do tennis here, but they can do it in Paris as well. So
but maybe there is something specific here.
I would actually, if you're here in the summer, I would go to Wimbledon.
Okay.
So I'd visit, because what you get is you get the British culture and everything about that. Mm-hmm. And it's all fully kind of visible there, but then you also get great tennis. So I'd go to that if you can.
Okay, cool. That's a good recommendation. And so where, last thing, where people can follow you? Where do you, so obviously on Twitter, but just one previous question, sometimes I'm sorry.
You're good.
But do you document also what you're doing? I mean, like the way you're building, more like, you know, like your company, I guess, maybe on LinkedIn or?
A little bit on LinkedIn. I want to share more because I think it's just interesting for other tiny companies to see how others are building. And it'd be great to great to hear, like, on your side as well, how you guys are doing it. So a bit on LinkedIn, but generally, I split 50-50 time on LinkedIn and then Twitter. So you can just find me on at Haining Max on Twitter.
I will put the links in the show notes.
Perfect. And that's where I'm hanging out really, and trying to share and build in public a bit more.
Okay. No newsletter?
We've got a newsletter, but not a personal,
But you have one for
exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only place where we really document and share. Like we do, but I'm not very comfortable with like social media. I do it because we have to, everyone, it's important for the visibility and kind of like it sometimes. But our newsletter, we try to almost every week share something, not personal, but like company level, like the backstories kind of thing. I think people like that. I wish we were better at Instagram and to do photos, more lively things, but.
You guys are good on YouTube, though, aren't you? You've got some YouTube presence and stuff.
Yeah, a little less now, but we did a lot on YouTube, but more like, you know, tutorials, these kind of things.
Got you.
Like we never really managed to turn into like YouTubers, really.
Got you. Yeah. Yes.
But maybe that will come. I like the podcast actually. From my format, I would say is more the podcast and, you know, the conversation.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's a nice intimate format. So yeah, exactly. It's good. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. And I'm curious to see you next time we'll have a chance to talk.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me. Cool. Yeah, it's been really fun.
What a great conversation again. Very happy to have a chance to meet with Max. It was a very cool setting, actually, this RCA place. And I really like the exchange. I mean, it's always great to meet fellow no-coders, and especially people who went through the same thing of discovering no-code during the pandemic and having, you know, common relations and a similar vision. So I really enjoyed. I hope you also enjoyed. And for me, it's now time to take my train. I'm going to head to St. Pancras to catch my train. It was a great week in London. I'm very happy I had a chance to produce those 4 episodes. I hope you like them too. If you did, please share this podcast with 2 people who are interested in no-code. You could share them with anyone you want, but really I think they're especially interesting for people who are in no-code, and there are more and more people around no-code. You should get all your friends to get into those no-code tools, because they are usage, I think, for pretty much everyone. And hopefully you will hear me soon. In a new season, I don't know where it's going to be. I know the No-Code Summit is going to be in Europe, in Paris, in October. I live in Paris, of course. I'm going to be at the summit. It will be probably the opportunity for me to meet some very interesting foreign people. So there might be some interviews, opportunities. So maybe that will be a bit of a different season where instead of traveling somewhere, people will travel to me. Yes, they travel, of course, for the summit, but maybe they also come to see me a little bit. I mean, after all, I started this French no-code community, and it's one of the reasons why there is a summit in France. But yes, let's see. I don't want to seem like it's all about me. Anyways, thank you for listening, for still being here after all those episodes, after this long outro. I'm looking forward for the next conversation on No Code World Radio.